hour number three of Midday with Trey and BK. Coming up at 12:45 with Crosstalk with Rod Babers. Ahead of the Rodcast from 1 to 3. And Shooting the Bull at 12:30. A guide dog was kicked off of a public bus for being black. And in mere minutes, we are talking with lifetime Dallas Cowboy and Super Bowl champ Daryl Johnston about his new role as the general manager of the Alliance of American Football's San Antonio Commanders. I'm Trey Elling. Brad Kellner is across from me. Adam Wagner behind the glass today. Text us. The Specs text line is 337-3776. Without further ado, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline and welcome Daryl Johnston to the show. Daryl is, of course, a lifetime Dallas Cowboy, three-time Super Bowl champ, analyst for the NFL on Fox, and the GM for the San Antonio Commanders and the Alliance of American Football. The Commanders host the Orlando Apollos this Sunday at 3 in the Alamo Dome. Go to AAF.com for tickets or check the action out on CBS Sports Network. Daryl, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Daryl, you're a football lifer who has been around the sport in a variety of ways, of course, as a player, also as a guy who broadcasts the games now. Who or what convinced you to try applying your expertise to general managing?
Well, I think everybody that's played the game at some point has that desire to see if they could create a roster that would have success in football. So we've seen it with Ozzie Newsome up in Baltimore, with John Elway out in Denver, John Lynch now out in San Francisco at the NFL level. And this was just one of those things that I got a little bit of interest in, you know, having spent a little bit of time talking to some of the guys in the front office side. And, you know, you start to get that urge and that desire to see if what you've learned, what you've been taught, what you've experienced throughout your career, if you were to apply that to the construction of a roster, how successful would you be? So, I've talked to a lot of guys once the opportunity came, and you start to hear how many other guys are like, oh, that's awesome. You know, I'd love to see if my vision, what I think a football team should be, is actually the right way to construct it.
Has there been a most surprising thing about the job since you took over back in the summer?
It's a lot more than just football. You know, as the general manager, you've got a lot of other responsibilities, especially with the Alliance being a startup. You know, there's some things as we start to build a really, really strong foundation with the league and with our franchises that you want to make sure you have done right the first time. So there has been a lot of things outside of the football arena, especially in regards to evaluation of players and things like that, that consume parts of your day. The hardest part has been, you know, delivering the bad news. We've cut down from 85 to 75. Then we've cut down from 75 to 52. And then what's been really hard here the last week, and we're going to get into that again, getting ready for Orlando, is taking 52 guys on your active roster and reducing that down to 44. You know, that's the hard part, to tell a guy in a league that's preaching the development of players and the opportunity to get on the field and get seen on film, that they're going to be inactive that week. So that's something that that all of the GMs and the head coaches and the trainers and the strength coaches, you know, everybody on the football side is trying to push this. So, you know, if we've got 52 guys healthy, let's dress all 52. You know, if the opponent can't match the 52, let's get down to the number where both teams have equity in that roster. But we want to get these guys out on the field.
Daryl, did you have any doubts or reservations about taking this job? Obviously, with the Alliance being a startup, as you mentioned, was there any fear in your mind that maybe this wasn't the right decision on your part?
Not at all. Not when I saw the people involved. To see Charlie Ebersole as the founder, the visionary of what the league was, knowing that he had just, you know, completed a documentary, you know, on spring football, and was going to know better than anybody, you know, what were the good ideas? What were some of the pitfalls as other leagues have tried to develop this concept over the last 25 years, 30 years? You know, where did they go wrong, and what are some of the things that they did well that we can incorporate into what we're doing? So I knew that he had a vision that was going to be built on a strong foundation. And then the fact that he went out and got Bill Polian as his co-founder on the football side, and then the people that came in as the general managers and the head coaches. And then you started to see the staff being created for each of the franchises, and the names are very recognizable. So for me, with anything, it's all about the people. So there was no hesitancy for me at all. Once you see who's involved with the Alliance, it really anything anything that you're talking about at that point just becomes excitement. You know, you were excited for the opportunity. You were excited to be a part of this moving forward.
Talking to lifetime Dallas Cowboy and three-time Super Bowl champion Darryl Johnston, who of course is an analyst for the NFL on Fox, and now the GM for the San Antonio Commanders in the Alliance of American Football. The Commanders host the Orlando Apollos this Sunday at 3 in the Alamo Dome. Go to AAF.com for tickets or check the action out on CBS Sports Network as well. Now, Darryl, you talked about some former players who have taken up the GM capacity. Were there any guys that you specifically picked the brains of to try and really learn about the job before you actually took it yourself?
I did. John Dorsey's been a great friend, a great mentor while he was in Kansas City. I've always had a really good relationship with Andy Reid, and when Andy got the job in Kansas City, I would go out to Kansas City during training camp and just kind of immerse myself in football for two or three days in that training camp environment just to kind of get back into the swing of things before the NFL season started, and I struck up a relationship with John Dorsey. And then as I started to think about heading down this path, you know, John was always open to having me come up there. And 1 year after the draft, he kind of took me through the whole process they've gone through and how he sets everything up. And then he gave me a list of people, you know, that I should reach out to, you know, anything from directors of personnel to general managers around the league, to some of the scouts that he thought were extremely talented. So kind of that whole hierarchy of what a front office would be, just to see what the day-to-day tasks of each of those positions would be. Then I reached out to Ron Wolf, who was the architect of the great Packer teams back in the 90s, went up and visited with Bill Parcells up in Saratoga, to pick his brain a little bit. So you kind of put together some notes and get all the good advice that they provide, and then you try to blend that with some of the things that you believe in, and then try to create the way that you want to do it. I don't want to do it exactly how somebody else has done it. I want to make sure, you know, whether I succeed or I fail, that it was on my merit. It was things that I believed in, things that I thought would work. You know, just the hard part has been, you know, incorporating all these great ideas and recommendations from those guys and putting it into mine. And then Will McClay is probably, you know, the big reason I'm here up in Dallas. He invited me out to OTAs this past June and spent that whole time with the Cowboys going through the day-to-day operations there. And that's really when the opportunity for the Alliance came. So for me, it was really timing and circumstance, you know, being out there at the Star during the course of the OTAs and having, you know, somebody from the Alliance come in, and Will McClay said, hey, you know, Darryl's been looking at this for about 3 years now. And, you know, he might be an option for you if you decide to go to San Antonio. And then Steven and Jerry Jones were very important, very helpful to me with reaching out to Bill Polian and kind of giving me the stamp of approval that this was something I was serious about and had invested a little bit of time in getting ready for this opportunity.
Have you learned anything from Jerry Jones in terms of his role as the GM of the Cowboys?
Well, I mean, that's a unique dynamic that works in Dallas. You know, Will is the guy there that does a lot of the heavy lifting day to day, along with Alex Loomis and the staff. But yeah, Jerry's going to have final. He's going to have final say on the decisions that happen there, along with Steven. So it's a different dynamic. But the legwork, all the evaluation, all the gathering of information, you know, comes out of Will and Alex and everything like that. And Jerry and Steven sit in on that and are brought up to speed, but they're kind of that final say in what the decisions are going to be made. And that was the interesting thing to listen to Will talk, you know, about, you know, how important it was in the delivery of the message. And you do truly believe that this is the best thing for the franchise. And how do you sell that? How are you able to get that point across? So, you know, for me, it was real helpful, because I'm going to be walking into meetings and I'm going to have ideas. How do I sell that idea for the benefit of the entire franchise? How do I make everybody in that room buy into what my vision is? So, it's actually some really, really good advice, you know, from Will in Dallas and the interesting dynamic that they have working there.
Kind of a two-part question here, Darryl. You know, number one, you sounded very confident. You mentioned it in a previous answer, confident about the league being successful. But are you at all surprised how successful this league was in week one? I mean, you guys had 30,000-plus down at the Alamo Dome, and then the TV ratings were out of this world, beating the NBA primetime Saturday night game. Did that surprise you at all? And also, how big could this league grow if you guys had that much success in week one?
Well, I think it just shows you the strength of the game of football. You know, one of the things that Charlie recognized and why he wanted to do this was, you know, the drop-off in participation in fantasy sports right after Super Bowl. There's kind of this big lull And as a sports fan, you know, for me, I'll watch everything on television. You know, but still, that was there for me. You know, once the Super Bowl ends, I'm hanging on until, you know, March Madness starts, and then the Masters is coming. So, you know, you're waiting for those big sporting events, and what the Alliance has done is now giving you, you know, it gives you 12 weeks of very competitive football, you know, in that place. And then when we wrap up, you know, the NFL is going to be getting ready to start up, you know, the meat and potatoes of their off season with OTAs and getting ready for training camp. So it's creating a year round calendar for the game of professional football. So I was not really surprised. I knew San Antonio would embrace us. I really did. I mean, that's been evident from day one down here. You know, the mayor and everything that he did to get the franchise here in San Antonio, Mayor Nuremberg, has been unbelievable. We've had small events during the course of this whole process down here in San Antonio that have, you know, brought out 750 fans, you know, 1,100 fans to small events, and nobody around the Alliance, the other franchise cities, was generating that kind of interest. So we had a really good feel going into week one that we were going to put up a big number. And then we've created great partners. Vic Gregovitz, our team president, has done a great job. You know, HEB has been an outstanding partner. They bought 5,000 tickets for military families. So the men and women of our military, for all the service they provide for us, a way to pay them back. And, you know, that's a relationship that we want to continue down here. So we're projecting to come close to that number again this weekend. Now, we've got some better weather. You know, last week, you know, it was kind of cold and rainy, you know, at kickoff time. So there's not a lot of tailgating going on. There's not a lot of pregame activity. So this week it's going to be in the 70s as we get towards kickoff or having the ball placed down. We're expecting, you know, a number similar to what we had last week, with the preparation that we could have a big walk-up number because the weather's nice. So, you know, I have no doubt, and I haven't through this whole process, that the San Antonio Commanders will lead the league in attendance at the end of the season.
Love that. And, Darryl, we want to give you the opportunity. Of course, we're up in Austin. I mean, less than an hour away from you guys down in San Antonio. For people who are new to this league, and just about everybody is, what other activities, you know, pregame, going on during the game day atmosphere, what other things do you have going on so we can try to encourage some folks to get down there on Sunday?
We're still trying to build a lot of that. You know, the number one thing was making sure that we had a good product on the field. So now that we've got week one under our belt, and everybody feels good about that, I think that you'll start to see the individual franchises now start to try and create their own in-game experience, pregame experience. So those are things that we're going to have to start, you know, focusing on and working on. You know, last week we had some bumps in the road, to be honest with you. We had some long lines getting into the stadium due to the weather and some reduced entrances. We've got to be better there. We had long waits at concession stands. I think we actually ran out of some things at concession stands. We've got to be better there. But it's good to be surprised by the attendance as opposed to holding the doors open and nobody showing up. So we're going to kind of work our way through what is the most important things that we need to be good at moving forward. And as we get to that point, we're going to try and create some pregame experiences and different things like that here at the Alamo Dome. The good thing is we've got a home game here this weekend against Orlando. Then we're going to be on the road for a month. So that's going to give us about a month to really kind of sit down and figure things out and what would be best for the fans that are going to make that trip down here to San Antonio to watch us play, to spend money on a ticket. What can we do pregame to make that experience even better for them? So, you know, we've got one more home game this weekend, and then we'll be on the road for a month. And hopefully when we get back from that long road trip, we'll have some good stuff in place and we'll have another big crowd ready to watch the Commanders.
And again, you can go to AAF.com if you're interested in purchasing tickets. If not, if you want to watch it on television, it is Sunday at 3 o'clock. That's the kickoff time on CBS Sports Network. Now, Darryl, in looking at the AAF schedule, I noticed that the championship game for this league is Saturday, April 27th, which is also the final day for the NFL draft. While league co-founder Charlie Ebersol, who you've mentioned a couple times in this conversation, has come out as being opposed to signing guys who aren't yet eligible for the NFL draft, would you be on board with the AAF maybe signing guys who have just completed their college eligibility and are maybe seen as fringe draft picks as a way to help them to improve their draft stock against pro competition?
The big thing is right now, and we've seen this, is other guys become available to add to our roster. We're being very selective here in San Antonio. Our guys have done a tremendous job of creating a chemistry and a culture that helps winning. And I don't want to do anything to disrupt that. Mm-hmm. So we would be very we'd be very cautious at that time. And when you're talking about April 27th as being the end of the draft and everything like that, you know, there's some things set in place. We want to build relationships as we move forward. We want to have a good working relationship with the NFL. We want to have a good working relationship with all the colleges that are involved in the NCAA. So, you know, a lot of the things that we do will be done in conjunction with them. And one of the things that we have talked about is making sure we don't do anything that would upset or disappoint the NCAA in regards to having conversations with their players before they're really eligible to be a part of what we're doing here with the Alliance. So the restrictions that are put in place, you know, we've been told to strictly adhere to them. Tampering is one of the big things that Bill Polian always talks about. And whether that's something with a collegiate player who's probably not eligible to be having those conversations, a professional player that actually has rights allocated to another team, you know, one of the things that we want to do is be an honorable league. And that's something that Bill Polian has stressed from day one. So the decisions that they put in place will make sure that things are fair and equitable, not only for us and the franchises involved, but for the players themselves. You know, they're one of the three stars. You know, it's the game, the fans, and the players. So one of the things that is a big focus here with the Alliance is the players. So we don't want to do anything that's not in their best interest.
Totally understandable, Daryl. And last thing before we let you go, congrats on your daughter, Evan, committing to play at your alma mater. How proud are you that she's following in dad's footsteps as a student athlete at Syracuse?
Oh, that's outstanding on your homework. I appreciate that. you know, I couldn't be more proud. It was weird because when she was going up for the trip last weekend, you know, she was upset. It was my birthday on Sunday, and it was our opener on Saturday. And she's like, "Dad, I'm not going to be there." I said, "Evan," I said, "this is, you know, her and my wife both, you know, we're so sad that we can't be there for you." And I said, "Listen, you know, you guys are on a very important trip as well." So I actually got the confirmation on Saturday morning, and I was surprised at how proud I was of her. You know, it was a different feeling than I anticipated. So I'm really happy for her. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of dedication. You know, the game of lacrosse has really grown here in the state of Texas. And I couldn't be happier for her. She's excited to get back up into the Northeast. She always has enjoyed her time when we go up that way. We kind of had a feeling that was an area of the country that she'd be leaning in when we talked about colleges. So, very, very proud of her, not only for what she's accomplished, but yeah, we've got a legacy. We've got a second generation Orangeman going up to Syracuse.
Fantastic. He is Daryl Johnson, lifetime Dallas Cowboy, Super Bowl champ, and GM of the San Antonio Commanders. They're back at home this weekend versus the Orlando Apollos. Get tickets, AAF.com. Kickoff is at 3:00. If you can't make it to the game, definitely check it out at CBS Sports Network as well. Daryl, thank you so much for the time. Best of luck with this, and maybe we can catch up with you later in the season as you guys get to that home game number 3.
Thank you, Moose.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Good stuff right there from the 3-time Super Bowl champ, Daryl Moose Johnston, of course, the general manager for the San Antonio Commanders of the AAF. And yes, their second game coming up this Sunday afternoon. Coming up for us on the midday program, we will shoot the bull, including the story. Trey, you heard the expression, "he got"?
No.
It's when you just get duped into believing something that isn't actually true.
Like you've been had. Like me asking you where Phil Collins was in the Genesis Open standings?
Not like that. But you did give me. But I wouldn't call it got. I'll come up with some examples. But 24/7 Sports got in a recruiting story.
Oh, I haven't heard this one yet.
Plus the city of New York City considering banning pre-employment marijuana tests. I might need to pick up a job in another city. And apparently there's racist people towards dogs.
On buses. And more evidence that the fan should have very little say-so when it comes to coming up with a team's nickname.
Oh, boy.
Fort Worth Star-Telegram asked the people what the Dallas XFL team should be called.
Oh, boy.
Overwhelming results for a name that should not happen.
All right, that's all coming up. It's Friday. It's Midday with Trey and BK. This is The Horn.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK. Make sure to check out the season opener for Texas Longhorn Baseball this evening, 6:15 pregame, 6:30 first pitch. You can check out Texas baseball all weekend long as they take on Luloff, the Raging Cajuns, a.k.a. an official name that I am no longer calling them. That's what the school wants you to call them, but they're Luloff in our minds, damn it. First game for the Longhorn baseball season tonight. Next weekend is the season opener for Texas baseball. They host Purdue.
The home opener.
Home opener, excuse me.
Next weekend. Yeah, they got a trip to Rice down in H-Town on Tuesday. I'm sure there'll be a lot of Longhorn fans down there as well. But yes, baseball season, college baseball season is upon us. And of course, pitchers and catchers have already reported across Major League Baseball. So you see them heads out there. It's right around the corner. We'll see if by opening day of the Major League Baseball season, if Bryce Harper and Manny Machado and Dallas Keuchel will have teams. Still trying to get that deal figured out. All right, it's Friday. Happy Friday to you and yours. Should be a beautiful weekend. Damn near 87 degrees, the high temperature in Austin, Texas, USA, America today. It's going to feel like late spring here in mid-February, so enjoy that. Should be nice all weekend long, whatever you have going on. We've got 30 more minutes of this show. We've got bits going on. It's time to shoot the bull.
Shooting the bull.
Shooting the bull, sponsored by Audio Visual Consultations, BK.
255-8678, the phone number to call to get the home TV setup of your dreams. Trey just talked about it, man. They've hooked all of us up. All three of us on this show, a ton of us at the horn, and thousands of Central Texans over the years. And taking a quick peek at the Texas Stars schedule, if you're looking for something to do this weekend, you've got a game tonight and a game tomorrow. Get out there, the HEB Center at Cedar Park, and support the Texas Stars Foundation. Buy those 50-50 raffle tickets. You win some money for yourself. You help some great causes around Central Texas. TexasStars.com, AVConsultations.com as well. All right, Trey, I'm going first today.
Okay.
I'm taking the lead.
All right.
I tried to tell you what got means. Let me give you the best example, perhaps in the history of sport, for getting got. Manti Te'o got by his fake girlfriend, Lene Kukua, who never actually existed.
He got catfished.
He got. Yeah, catfished. It appears our friends over at 24/7 Sports got. There's a kid.
Apparently it was Rivals 2, according
Rivals
to a texter.
Rivals 2, yes, Rivals 2. 24/7, actually, we'll get to it, I'll explain it.
Okay.
Rivals was the original the original site that got first, and then 24/7 ended up getting got as well. God, I'm confusing the hell out of people over the age of 25. There is a kid by the name of Blake Carringer who plays high school football at Grace Christian in Tennessee. Carringer is 5'7", 220 pounds. Not quite the ideal body type for a big-time college football recruit.
It's pretty squatty.
That is very squatty.
Borderline Weeble.
Kid's fat. Go ahead and call him. We don't body shame, but he is. All right. Well, Blake Carringer, according to multiple recruiting websites, including Rivals and 24/7 Sports, is actually 6'6". 315 pounds, and apparently is one of the top college football prospects in the state of Tennessee.
Say apparently.
Apparently. Because, in fact, Blake Carringer is 5'7", 220 pounds. So on multiple recruiting websites, including Rivals and 24/7, there is a legit recruiting profile for this kid that says he's 6'6", 315, is an offensive lineman, and also says he has offers from just about everywhere, including the Bamas and Tennessees of the world. When it turns out, the whole thing is a catfishing story. Not real. And these websites were duped. Rivals had ranked this kid 3 stars, 24/7. Hadn't ranked him themselves, but had his composite ranking as 3 stars that they got from Rivals. And they had him on their website as well.
How are you ranking him 3 stars if you haven't seen the guy play?
Yeah, you got to see game film, right?
The kid, it's just a catfishing situation. He was listed as the number 35 college football prospect in Tennessee. And it looks like just some kids at this guy's high school started a recruiting page for Blake Carringer and turned him into one of the better offensive lineman recruits in the country.
Wow.
And multiple recruiting outlets got. So the kid does exist, but once again, 5'7", 220, not a kid who's got a shot to play college football, not a kid who has offers from Alabama and Tennessee and Georgia and Syracuse and other big-time programs across the country. The recruiting page, needless to say, has been removed from both of these websites. So we have a Ron McKelvey-esque story going on in 2019.
You recruited the guy a three-star and you hadn't seen a single second of tape. Oh my gosh, man.
They didn't confirm this with anybody. No tape, nothing.
There's SB Nation did a good job of compiling tweets of this guy being taught. I mean, good on the students for duping everybody. This just goes to show. I'm not going to call
the kids are great, man. Kids are awesome sometimes.
I'm not going to call the entire process a sham because there are plenty of guys that we know who go out and cover these kids on a weekly dip basis during football season or in constant contact with them. But there is an element of recruiting coverage that is absolute BS, and this just proves as much.
They had a Twitter account for this guy that's since been deactivated. It was Carringer 2020. The headshot, because you're going to be able to tell if a guy's 5'7", 220 in a headshot. They ended up using a 2017 Arizona State signee named Corey Stevens. That's the headshot they had used on these websites. This is unbelievable. They duped everybody. Shout out to these high school kids at Grace Christian. Maybe not the most Christian thing they've ever done, but shout out. That's an awesome bit. And they duped rivals, and they duped 24/7.
Did this go so far that they actually created another fake account of a guy named Tyson Kellogg, who was the founder of
Kellogg's Cereal?
Ethsfer.
What about our guy Martin? Or Marvin, who works for Kellogg's. Good dude, man.
He's the founder of Ethver, which is the East Tennessee High School football recruits. And at one point, he actually tweeted at rivals football camps saying, "I recently saw that you followed one of my recruits, Blake Carringer. If you need more information about him, feel free to send me a DM. Hashtag never settle."
Never settle. Part of the duping process. Rusty Bradley, what a name that is. He's the head coach at Grace Christian, head football coach there. He got a call from a Georgia Tech assistant coach asking about Blake Carringer. He was like, "Are you sure? Are you sure you're calling about this kid?" And that's when the plan was foiled.
Gosh,
that's when the dupers had been duped.
Was just coaching on it?
No way. The coach wasn't in on it. He found out because he got a recruiting call from Georgia Tech. Okay. It's like, "Are you sure you want this 5'7", 220-pound kid? It's not very good."
Oh, the kid actually did play.
The kid exists. It's just they made him 6'6", 315.
Yeah, I thought he was just lying about everything.
No, apparently it's
but
a real kid.
But he's actually on a team.
But yeah, they gave him like this alter ego, basically.
You've seen the Doug English offensive line training method where he literally has his guys pushing hay bales. That's what they did with this Weeble on the team. They actually just had him lay on the ground, pushed him around to make sure that they were getting low enough and getting the proper leverage as well.
He's a GPA booster on the high school team.
Maybe not even that, although based on how many people they duped, perhaps he is.
Yeah, no kidding.
Guys, the XFL comes about around this time next year, and there already is a Dallas franchise. We had the story come out a week ago about Bob Stoops being named the head coach and GM for the Dallas franchise. One thing that's not known is what the Dallas franchise's nickname or mascot name is going to be. So the Fort Worth Star-Telegram listed several options and gave its readers a chance to weigh in. The options included the Bandits, the Rattlers, the Sprawl.
What?
Sprawl, like urban sprawl. The Assassins, the Gunslingers, the Wranglers, Armadillos.
Nope.
The Y'all, Y'ALL.
The Dallas Y'all.
The Giddy-Ups.
Jeez.
The Desperados.
Ooh, the old arena football team. Bring them back. I'm down for that.
And then a vote for other, which means that all your names suck and we want to go with something different altogether.
I think Dallas Desperados rolls off the tongue real well, man.
I think that.
Do you have a favorite?
I like the Assassins, too.
I like the Desperados or Gunslingers. Kind of dig that. The old Western-style bid, I'm a fan of a couple of those.
More than 50% of people weighed in for a single name. 55% overall, with no other name getting more than 10%. Second place was the Gunslingers. I actually kind of like that name, and that is harkens back to the USFL days. I think it was the San Antonio Gunslingers. But the number one name that Star Telegram readers selected.
It's got to be Y'all.
The Dallas Y'all.
No, thanks. Come on. This isn't a real poll. They're not going to use this, are they?
This isn't a semi-pro soccer team in the DFW area, guys.
I figured it was just going to be Dallas XFL or XFL Dallas if they wanted to go with the soccer bid.
Like a FC Dallas.
Yeah, exactly. The Dallas Y'all?
What is the mascot for that?
Hey, it's a bunch of dudes?
At least they got the apostrophe right. At least they didn't go Y-A apostrophe L-L. That bothers me to no end. They got the apostrophe right. They got the spelling right. But the nickname, I don't think so.
I don't know if I've ever seen that. The Y-A apostrophe L-L.
It's infuriating, and usually, and God, I hate to be this person because I rail on this person from time to time. Usually it's a Yankee who spells it like that. Usually it's somebody who does not have the word in his...
Guilty.
Please tell me that you've changed that over time. You're not still a Y-A apostrophe L-L, are you?
We don't put the apostrophe in there. It's just all one word.
Bernie Williams, a big y'all guy, huh?
Who?
Bernie Williams.
From the Yankees?
You said Yankees, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
Danny Tartable.
Hey, speaking of Chuck Knoblauch, the Yips. Speaking of New York, I'm not sure if we were. I was. New York City lawmakers. Trey, one of the best parts of radio...
The pay?
No. They don't drug test in this line of work. If you hear the conversations on this program or on this station, it's pretty obvious that they don't.
Truth.
New York City lawmakers are considering a proposal that would prohibit drug testing by companies for marijuana as a requirement to be hired. Think about it. I mean, I've had so many friends. They're like, oh, I got to stop smoking weed. Because I'm trying to get a job, or I gotta hit the sauna. I gotta drink the cranberry juice, because I gotta take this drug test for work. Well, New York City, Jumaine Williams sponsoring a legislation that's set to be introduced Wednesday. So it was introduced a couple days ago, that would ban companies in the city from testing for THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana. Now, there would be some exceptions made for safety and security sensitive jobs, like the NYPD and some federal type of jobs. But for other jobs in New York City, the law could go into effect 1 year after its approval and would forbid New York City employers from drug testing for weed. We down with this? Is this an expired bit, the drug testing for weed, for a not really that important of a job? Like, you could do a sales job if you go home and smoke some weed, okay?
You're probably better off doing
the
sales job.
You're probably better off, yeah.
Under the influence of some PEDs.
Nah, man, you start talking, right?
Just make you hungrier. I don't talk too good on those things.
Yeah, I feel like the drugs that they need to be watching out for, there are enough tells amongst the individual who is actually the heroin addict or the cokehead or the meth head or some of the other very vicious drugs that are really taking down our society, unfortunately. The opioid crisis in America is one of the underrated things that's happening in this country. But as far as weed is concerned, I'm not necessarily going to take issue with something that most people use as a form of relaxation at nights. And I think you can probably tell the person who's not going to be a good addition to your team if they're that big of a pothead that they show up to an interview or conversations before you actually give them the job.
Put it down for 1 second.
Or even in the probation period, they're showing up clearly stoned out of their gourd.
Just blitzed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, have you guys been in New York lately? I mean, I was there recently in the
last
past
year.
I don't know. I mean, I noticed a marijuana stench on the streets. It's very, very lax there, man.
Not as strong as San Francisco, but
you're
right.
I haven't been to San Fran, though.
They got the delivery drugs up there in New York.
They do. Just call like, the bike man.
Just crazy. Like Half-Baked showed.
Yep. Crazy concept. All right, they're shooting the bull. When we come back, we'll get to a couple more of these stories and do a little crosstalk with Rod Babers. It's Friday, baby. It's coming up. Midday with Trey and BK on the horn.
Final segment of the week for Midday with Trey and BK. Thanks to all of you for listening today, earlier in the week, texting in as well. Specs text line 337-3776. We'll bring Rod Babers into the fray now before the Rodcast gets going at 1. What's up, Rod? How you doing today?
What's up, fellas? How's everything going?
Everything is good. What's coming up on the Rodcast today?
We'll get into Trevor Bauer's comments. I thought they were really interesting. We didn't talk about them yesterday, but we'll talk about the situation, the state of Major League Baseball free agency and what that, how that reflects on the game. Also, we'll talk about the AAF a little bit because their pitch to go get Colin Kaepernick, even though we know there's a lot of subplot there, all right, talking about Colin Kaepernick. It always gets into a deeper discussion. It's hard to just talk football when you're talking about Colin Kaepernick, but I think it's a good reflection on the AAF. Even though we know their NFL affiliation, connection, they don't have the stamp totally yet of the, you know, the NFL stamp yet, but they're probably going to get it if things continue on the right path. But going after Colin Kaepernick says, hey, man, we're not totally under the thumb of the NFL. We're willing to take on something controversial. And I think it's a good move for them. And also improves the product. They need better quarterback play. That was one of the things I criticized. Mm-hmm. They need better quarterback play. They went after Tim Tebow, reportedly, too. And Tim Tebow said, no, I'm focused on baseball. I'm sure they're going to go after Johnny Manziel if they already haven't tried to, you know, can we buy out Johnny Manziel's contract, whatever it is. I like that. Part of the AAF. They understand, like, hey, man, we need some star power.
Yeah.
They're trying to get it.
Yeah, as much as better quarterback play, which is obviously important, you need individuals that bring more eyes to the television.
You need
screen.
Something sexy. Yeah, I mean, right. Great football is great. And you know what the sexiest part of the AAF was? What was the sexiest part of the weekend? What was the sexiest part? The part that went viral.
The decapitating hit that happened on the quarterback.
Yeah. Not decapitated.
Yeah. His capa was detated, as Michael Scott would say.
De-helmeted. Now, if we saw a decapitation, I'm watching every game.
That is the football equivalent of a decapitation. I totally agree. Yeah. We don't want to see real decapitation. Yeah, it's not medieval
don't
times.
Say we, because I'm down for it.
You're a savage.
Last story of the week, guys, and I'm glad we had Rod in for this one, because this harkens back to one of the great moments in American history with what happened with Miss Rosa Parks and her refusing to get off the bus. This happened last week in Liverpool, England, guys, where a guide dog was kicked off of a public bus for being black. The dog's owner is Megan Taylor. Megan suffered a major head injury when she was 15 that left her with permanent hearing loss, impaired balance, fainting episodes, vertigo, and episodic blindness.
That's a bad cocktail of conditions there, man.
Exactly. Jeez. She's now 22 and has a 2-year-old black lab named Rally to help her get around.
What she needs. That's a, like, you little, that's part of, like, everything that you have. That's literally for her. That's a necessity day to day. Have to have it with me.
No question.
Yeah.
Well, last week,
just a companion.
Rally and Megan got onto a public transport bus, but it really upset a fellow rider who started yelling at her, including, quote, why is there a bleeping dog on the bus? Megan tried to explain the situation, but the woman didn't believe her, saying, quote, guide dogs are yellow, not black. Eventually, Megan realized it just wasn't worth it. She said, you know what, we'll catch the next bus. So she decided to get off the bus with her black dog Rally.
So this wasn't like a cop or an official. This was just a really horrible person. Another bus rider who just did this.
Terrible human being.
Well, first of all, the true issue is you're discriminating against someone with disabilities, and the dog is a necessity for them to live a certain quality of life. So that, number one. But people are, I'll say, racist. They discriminate against dogs of color. It's queer to say the Humane Society and everybody, they have studies on this. Black dogs are adopted less than dogs of other color.
How about that?
Which is ironic.
Trust me, I'm not trying to play the race card for dogs.
Come on, Rod!
It's also ironic, though, because dogs are established as racist creatures themselves.
I have met a couple of racist dogs, yes. Huh? I have met some dogs who are indeed racist. They are. Which is weird, because my thing is, man, if you have, like, a... you know, say you have a dog that is racist, so we know there are racist dogs, but he's also, you know, a bomb-sniffing dog or a drug-sniffing dog, he could actually be framing people of color as a racist dog. He's like, roo, 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 roo. He's like, no, I don't have any drugs. Like, no, no, you got something. Come with me. Because the dog is racist.
The system is already set up against socioeconomic classes, and now it may even be more so. That's crazy.
Dogs are racist, and people are racist against dogs. Yeah, there you go.
That's a terrible
Happy
story,
Black History
man.
Month.
Jeez.
And why do all these blackface stories come out during Black History
There's
Month?
There's been like four or five
There's
of
like
them
four
this
five
month.
Of them. You can't stay there for another month.
You can't do that ever.
Yeah. You got this 1 month.
2019, figure it out at this point.
People who
please.
Are breaking these stories, break them in March or January. All the blackface stories come out in our month.
It's the shortest month. Can they wait? It's the shortest month.
They have nothing going on.
Oh,
why are you doing it in February? We got football to talk about other stuff.
All right. Rodcast coming up. Chad and Kevin after that. Texas baseball tonight. Thanks to Occupy Left Field Guy and Moose Johnston for joining us today. All of you for texting and listening throughout the program. For the Fantasy Sports Guru, the Marine Adam Wagner. For the Sultan of Cynicism, the Vomit King Trey Elling. I am BK. We will be back to get a pop at the same time on Monday. Until then, let bygones be bygones. You can go and get the hell on. You and your mama. We out of here.